Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's podcast of the European Society of Anesthesiology and Intensive Care. This episode is kindly supported by Masimo. I will be your host. My name is Bernd Saugel from the University Medical Center in Hamburg in Germany. And today we will be reviewing the most relevant publications in the field of cardiovascular dynamics. And therefore, we have invited Professor Jean-Luc Félahy from Lyon in France. He is a world-leading expert in the field of hemodynamic monitoring and management, and we are very much looking forward to three papers that he will present. After each of the three papers that Jean-Luc will present, we will have a short discussion and conversation. And with this, I will welcome you again, Jean-Luc, and thank you very much for preparing the three publications.
Thank you, Bernd, for the nice introduction. Well, as you said, Bernd, and in order to avoid an annoying catalog of publications, we decided together to arbitrarily select three relevant studies in the field of hemodynamic in sepsis. The way to accurately and reliably assess blood pressure for routine practice, and the best strategy to manage blood pressure in non-cardiac surgery. So let's start with the first trial, so-called the CLOVERS trial, published last year in the New England Journal of Medicine. The CLOVERS trial is an unblinded superiority trial conducted at 60 US centers and including 1,563 patients with sepsis-induced hypotension refractory to initial fluid administration. Patients were randomized in two groups for a 24-hour period. Group 1, a restrictive fluid strategy, versus group 2, a liberal fluid strategy. And the primary outcome was all-cause mortality at day 90. First thing, if you look at the volume of fluids given before randomization, you can see that it is not at all negligible and similar in both groups. Second, after inclusion, the fluid strategy was clearly different between groups, as expected, as well as vasopressor infusion. Looking at the primary outcome, all-cause mortality at day 90, no difference was found between both fluid strategies, either overall or in different subgroups of patients' risk. So, the main result of the CLOVERS trial is that no significant difference in mortality, whatever the resuscitation strategy for managing the first 24 hours of sepsis-induced hypotension. Interestingly, both groups received 2 liters of intravenous fluid at the emergency department prior to randomization. Noticeably, low SOFA scores and low mortality rates, less than 15%, in both groups strongly suggest that the severity of sepsis was moderate. And finally, we can ask the question, what about individualized optimization of fluids guided by advanced hemodynamic monitoring rather than empiric restrictive or liberal approaches?
Thank you very much for sharing this first paper on fluid therapy in patients with sepsis and hypotension. I think you nicely emphasized the primary results and the limitations of the trial. I have 2 questions regarding this trial. The first one would be, as you already mentioned, most of those patients were treated in the emergency department and were relatively low risk for patients with sepsis. In patients treated in the emergency department, what hemodynamic monitoring methods could we use to individualize hemodynamic management?
Yeah, thank you. That's a good question. I think that the two I would recommend two non-invasive and quite easy to use monitors would suit to the emergency department, and I'm thinking about a non-invasive pulse control analysis by a digital photoplethysmography, that is the volume clamp method, you know, or maybe bioreactants. The Starling monitor could also be used at the emergency department in patients without an invasive artery catheter.
Yeah, that's true. There are different non-invasive methods now. They open in other advanced hemodynamic variables in patients treated in the emergency department, including pulse wave analysis, bioimpedance, bioreactance methods. So I completely agree. The second question would be, do you think that body weight should be considered when giving fluids? So in your daily clinical practice when treating septic patients, do you consider body weight, or do you give fixed amounts of fluids like 500 or 1000 ml, or do you individualize by the body weight?
You mean to tailor fluid administration on a morphologic individual basis?
Yeah.
That's a difficult question. I really don't know. You know, from a practical point of view, we avoid to give some fix volume to patients, and we prefer to use an individualized strategy, you know, based on monitoring and not on empiric fluid administration, whatever the body weight of the patients. Or I don't know if it would be better to take into account the body weight or not. I really don't know.
Yeah, it's a difficult question, and there is it's even not clear whether it then should be actual body weight or predicted body weight. And I agree that from a pragmatic point of view, it's very, very hard to do that in routine care. Yeah, but I think in the interest of time, we need to move on to the next study. The next study is on blood pressure measurements with oscillometry, and specifically focuses on whether the cuff size is important.
Yes, this is a cuff trial published last year in JAMA Internal Medicine. So the cuff trial, as you just said, is a randomized crossover trial including 195 community dwelling adults with a wide range of mid-arm circumferences. And for each patient, four sets of triplicate blood pressure measurements using an automated blood pressure device were realized with an appropriate, a too small, or a too large blood pressure curve in random order. And the main outcomes of the study were the difference in mean blood pressure when measured with a regular versus an appropriate blood pressure curve, and the difference in blood pressure when using a too small or a too large curve versus an appropriate curve. But this is a consort diagram of the study showing the number of patients included in each analysis. And let's see the main results. Picking the appropriately sized curve as the reference, you can see that a too large curve significantly underestimated blood pressure, whereas a too small curve overestimated blood pressure, especially systolic blood pressure, but also diastolic blood pressure. And the smaller the curve, the larger the overestimation. So, automated blood pressure readings obtained with a regular instead of an appropriate blood pressure curve that is taking into account the mid-arm circumference, resulted in strikingly inaccurate blood pressure measurements. Again, a too large curve resulted in significant lower blood pressure readings, and a too small curve resulted in significant higher blood pressure readings. So, individualized curve selection, including measurement of the mid-arm circumference, is warranted in clinical practice, and different curve sizes should be available at the bedside or in the OR.
Thank you very much for presenting this study. I think it again emphasizes that we need to take into account that biometric factors substantially vary among individual trials. That is important for everyday clinical practice because we use oscillometric measurements very confidently in so many patients in emergency departments, in the ICU, in the operating room, and we therefore, because we use it every day, kind of consider it a gold standard. But there are numerous factors that can influence the measurement. So the cuff size, of course, is important, as shown in that study. Are there other factors that we may be, ignore in daily clinical practice, so that we should be aware of, that can be important for the measurement performance of oscillometry?
Yes, many. Two important messages. Don't forget that oscillometry overestimates low blood pressures and underestimates high values of blood pressure. And don't forget also that the mean blood pressure only is directly measured, whereas systolic blood pressure and diastolic blood pressure are extrapolated thanks to proprietary algorithms which differed from one monitor to another. I think it's important to have that in mind.
Yeah, that is a very important point. We often simply accept the measurements and do not think about cuff sizes, but also not about the underlying algorithms that we usually do not know because they are proprietary. We would never do that if that would be a new monitoring device that everybody would ask for the algorithms, for the measurement methods, and would ask for more validation data. But simply because oscillometry is around for so many decades, we assume that it properly works. Very, very important point and an important study. And I think with this, talking about blood pressure monitoring, we now can move on to the third trial, which is a major trial on blood pressure management during non-aortic surgery.
Yes, you're right. We are now going to talk about the POISE 3 trial, aiming to publish last year also in Annals of Internal Medicine, and aiming to compare hypertension avoidance versus hypertension avoidance strategies in non-cardiac surgery. So this is a very large factorial randomized trial conducted at 110 hospitals in 22 countries and including almost 8,000 patients having non-cardiac surgery and receiving long-term antihypertensive therapy. Patients were randomized in two groups. Group one, having a hypotension avoidance strategy with a mean arterial pressure value targeted over 80 millimeters of mercury, and group two, hypotension avoidance strategy with a goal regarding mean arterial pressure over 60 millimeters of mercury. And both strategies were obtained either by withholding RAS inhibitors before and for 2 days after surgery in the hypotension avoidance strategy group, or by continuing all antihypertensive medications within the perioperative period in the hypertension avoidance strategy group, and the primary outcome was a composite one, including vascular death, non-fatal means myocardial injury, stroke, and cardiac arrest at day 30. What are the results? First, you can see that, as expected, I would say, less clinically significant hypotension was found in the hypotension avoidance strategy group, especially during surgery, rather than before or after surgery. The definition of hypotension being a systolic blood pressure below 90 millimeters of mercury requiring treatment. And second, no difference in the primary composite outcome was observed between both groups, as well as in all secondary and tertiary outcomes. So, the PulseWeek trial reported no significant difference in effects between both perioperative strategies, and they also suggest that maybe suboptimal adherence to the planned strategies and insufficient difference on hemodynamics between both strategies could be the reason why the main result of the study is a negative one, and also and noticeably patients, care providers, and study personnel were aware of the treatment allocation as a limitation of that study.
Yeah, thank you for presenting the POISE 3 trial. I think it's a complex trial comparing a hypotension avoidance versus a hypotension avoidance strategy. I agree that one aspect that we really need to consider when interpreting the results is that there was no profound hypotension in the two groups. Hardly any patient in that trial dropped to prior that we can use to conclude that hypotension is not important, but we can conclude that indiscriminately just increasing blood pressure to levels of around 80 versus around 60 does on a population level not improve outcomes. And of course, we always speak about the population harm threshold when we recommend keeping mean arterial pressure above 60 or 65. Do you think that individual patients have different individual harm thresholds and that we maybe should individualize the blood pressure targets during surgery?
You mean especially in chronic hypertensive patients, for instance?
For example, yeah.
Yeah. Well, maybe you're right, and we can believe that if we look at the results of the study by Wu et al. And also the study by Futi et al., the IMPRESS study, where more than 80% of patients had chronic hypertension, in the very recent French guidelines, not yet published, as you know, we suggest, but it's just an expert's opinion, you know, with a strong agreement between experts, but just an expert's opinion. We suggest a threshold above 70 millimeters of mercury for mean arterial pressure in patients with chronic hypertension. So maybe more than in others.
Yeah. There will be interesting results of major trials on individualized blood pressure management in the next 1 to 2 years. But I think at the moment it's safe to say that we should avoid profound and prolonged hypertension. So we should keep mean arterial pressure above levels of 60 to 65 in all patients having non-cardiac surgery. And we will get more evidence whether some patients require higher levels during surgery, but at the moment we cannot recommend to simply increase blood pressure in all of the patients.
I do agree.
Yeah, very good. These were three very, very interesting studies and trials. I think we are at the end of this episode. So thank everyone for listening to this episode. The European Society of Anesthesiology and Intensive Care releases podcasts like this every month on the ESAIC website and on various other streaming platforms and social media. And we hope that you will join us for our episode and for the next episodes. And with this, I wish you a good day and thank you again for listening.
This episode is sponsored by Massimo.